You're listening to the A Scully Cast, brought to you by www.ascully.com. And here are your hosts, A Scully and Sid Talk. So, England did well in the World Cup today, didn't they, Sid Talk?
Wake up, you're dreaming.
Yeah, and USA did even better yesterday. It's been a bit of a shitty weekend. We decided to watch the matches.
It's only a shitty weekend if you're not Ghana or Germany.
Yeah, well, I'm saying if you're... we decided to root for England and the USA, obviously, and we watched our two respective matches this weekend, and both were a pile of shit.
Oh, the America game was not a pile of shit at all. They fought like crazy. It doesn't matter that they lost. They played...
The English,
at least they went 120
I will
minutes.
Go on record of saying the English game was a pile of shit from England's side of things.
I disagree. That's very harsh. They tried.
I think
you're the one who gives commentators shit for being so harsh, and now you're doing the same thing?
I think they tried about 50% of the time. That's why they lost. Anyway.
I disagree.
So our hopes and dreams of winning the World Cup are ended.
Well, they tried that one time, and it wasn't counted. So that sucks. Yeah. Now that sucks.
That does kind of suck.
To me, I think that killed the spirit.
But. What I say is FIFA, next World Cup, bring back the laser pointer thing that tells you when the ball goes in so stupid linesmen don't call things wrong.
Or as a sport, yeah, people should be able to contend that stuff. Like, say, after the game, look, I mean, they still would have lost, but not necessarily. Their spirit was crushed.
It wouldn't help us anyway. So, yes, our hopes and dreams are dead for another 4 years, and... somebody else.
Your hopes and dreams are dead. Are your hopes and dreams all based on football?
Our soccer, football, hopes and dreams are dead for the next 4 years. And we'll see what we can do next time. But
we invest so much time in the sport, in fact, only when World Cup comes around, and we only watch the USA and UK.
I follow the UK teams, but I don't watch it live on TV or anything. But I do look at the scores each week. But... as far as the World Cup, I'd like to follow that. I'll still follow it. I'll watch the final.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it kind of knocks you, doesn't it, when your team's out. So, all that World Cup talk. Let's move on to... It's Sunday, June the 27th, 2010. This is After the Show number 128. And this week's movie that we will be reviewing is Flash Gordon, the 1980... I was going to say the 1980 version. There is another version, isn't there? The series from the 30s. And there was also a TV show, like a reboot of Flash Gordon that was on Sci-Fi Channel about a year ago. That was absolutely horrible.
I thought there was also a movie with Billy Zane or somebody.
I don't know anything about
Flash
that.
Flash Gordon.
There was also a movie called Flesh Gordon, believe it or not.
yes, how about Flesh Garden? There you go.
Yeah. So Flash Gordon, it's a 1980 movie. This is out on Blu-ray disc. It's a 2010 Blu-ray disc release, released on Tuesday the 15th of June in North America, so it's already out, you can go and get it. It's out on Blu-ray and DVD, and it's from our friends at Universal, and you're going to tell us what this movie is.
I'm not sure if it should be my my charge this week. I think because it's so beloved to you, you should do the
alright, so
synopsis.
This movie is Flash Gordon. It's, like I said, a 1980 movie.
No, you want a synopsis.
Like I understand.
Okay.
A 1980 movie... based on a comic strip / serialized... It wasn't a TV show. It was the kind of thing that they put in the cinema. But it was a short kind of movie.
It was just called a serial at the time.
Serial movie. You know, you saw it in front of the main feature when you went to the theater. They don't do that these days, but they should.
Oh, they totally should, man. Yeah. You could make
Pixar
such cool stuff.
Yeah, Pixar are the only ones who do it, as far as I know. Where they put a short film.
Still not the same, because it's theirs. It goes with their movie. Yeah, yeah.
Feels like an advertisement when you put in your own thing. But anyway, it's about the adventures of Flash Gordon, who is a... in this version of the movie, an American football player, hero to people, who, through a series of unfortunate events, ends up in sci-fi world... in space. I was going to say a series. He has to save the planet and save the damsel in distress and be heroic. Would you say that's...
Is that your synopsis, really?
Yeah.
I was going to have you do it because you just love it so much.
Well, I was saving the rest for the thing. That is it in a nutshell, right?
Mm.
And that's what a synopsis is.
It's a little underwhelming, but I'll
give
you the option to give it. Yeah.
So,
now for the movie.
Yeah. So, this movie means a lot to me because I grew up on it. And it was a big hit in Britain. But America, I don't believe it transcended. And that guy in the extra said because it felt too much like a European movie, which I do agree on. And I think that's why The Fifth Element didn't do particularly well here,
mm-hmm.
but did really well in Europe, because it also has a European feel.
Oh, The Fifth Element is fucking brilliant.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it's not... It's the way it's costumed, the way it is not...
Yeah.
Not made to please Americans, so is what I'm getting at. Well, Flash Gordon has an American hero, but it's got this odd... And that's what I always loved about it. The odd, colourful... Almost like... When I was watching it this time, in high def, and you really get to see the costumes, the colours... I was going to say how awesome everything is, but it's not particularly awesome. It's, you know, it's old days of costumes and stuff. I was getting a... Like, you love The Wizard of Oz. A Wizard of Oz... style vibe in the sci-fi universe. Like, I know it's not a musical.
I know what
you mean.
The
costuming and the sets, the quality of it. Because Wizard of Oz, it's beloved to you. It's an amazing looking movie, especially on Blu-ray. Now, I mean, you really see detail. I believe you see detail in this one. But they have that same, it's a stage, like a...
Well, because everything is handmade and fantastical. So yeah. When somebody's costume is... underneath, basically a cotton shell of clothing covered with big pieces of plastic slash supposed to be metal, clanking around, and it's obviously just sewn in on with a couple of stitches. But then when you take a step back, you see the glory of what it's supposed to be. But I think we are just more tuned in nowadays, because somewhere in the process of all this costuming and set making, you know, the tone of movie making has changed. It's like, not every movie's gritty or anything like that, but even when you look at something like Narnia or Harry Potter...
It's taken seriously.
It's taken seriously, and there's this tone of realism. Let's go real and add the fantastic, whereas Flash Gordon is more like, let's go with fantastic, and we're only limited by what we can really make. And
almost like watching a stage musical.
Yeah, totally.
Like you could see that working as a stage musical.
Because from a distance, everything looks grand, and then some of the problem comes when you start getting up close and, you know, like, that's not a problem.
Like I was saying, this was a beloved film from my childhood. I literally wore the VHS out. I watched it that much. You know, when this movie was on, it wouldn't have happened to you, but the voice snippets and... Because I've not seen it for, like, 15 years, probably. But the voice snippets and the one-liners all came to me before they happened.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Like, I was
sure.
Like, she's going to say Flash Gordon's alive. And she says Flash Gordon. So it's all like a script in my head that's just going off.
Oh, 100%. That's how I am when I watch Groundhog Day.
So that's how I was watching. Yeah, and for me too.
And
anything
Wizard
that I've
Oz.
Watched a lot. So I know I've watched this a lot because this many years later, I'm still pinpointing what they're going to say. And I'm going, oh my God, he's going to do that thing here, which I really loved when I was a kid. Like the American football part where they're bumping them on the head and stuff. You know, it's crazy. This film's not... This film, a lot of people won't get, I think. I have definitely a link to it from being a kid and loving sci-fi. I'd seen Star Wars. This was after Star Wars. I pretty much gobbled up any sci-fi stuff when I was a kid. Anything. Doctor Who, Flash Gordon, Star Wars, Space 1999, which I was just talking about, a TV show that
Buck
I loved.
Rogers, stuff like that.
Anything like that. I gobbled it up, so Flash Gordon was right on the nail, and I loved Queen when I was a kid. And I still love Queen to this day. I mean, my father loved Queen. He played Queen all the time, and I loved Queen. And when Queen was in this movie, same as this guy who was talking, I was like, you know, all over it. So, this movie, most people...
Do you want to ask me what I think, since I've never seen it, and I'm a grown-up,
not
and
yet.
I'm a woman?
But most people these days, I think, would watch this movie, if they just picked up this movie, going, oh, look, it's a sci-fi movie, Flash Gordon, because the cover of this Blu-ray doesn't indicate that it's an old movie or anything. You might just think, oh, that kind of looks cool. A guy with a sword and, like, some space thing, it's probably cool. Comic book movie, maybe. They would watch this and think, holy crap, what was that? I think. But, because it has that meaning to me, I still love it to this day. I think it is absolutely, it's kind of crappy. It's cheesy in all its the special effects are horrible. Like, really horrible.
But
sometimes okay, sometimes horrible.
But they're not. They're only horrible. You always say that because of now.
No. This came out after Star Wars, and Star Wars special effects, and I've watched Star Wars recently, are absolutely amazing compared to this movie. And I'm not talking they might not have had a budget like Star Wars.
Yeah.
But this was made after Star Wars, so Star Wars was there as a benchmark like 3 years before this. So the special effects are people with wires floating around and not even green screen because it didn't exist, just the real old...
I just think it's unfair to say that a movie has bad special effects when it's from 1980. I mean, Jesus, we're 20, 30 years away.
Did actually say that.
I understand.
That it has bad special effects. But, think about it, it's 1980. It's probably quite a low-budget film. Well, it cost $27 million to make, which wasn't a low-budget film in them days. But I think most of the money was spent on costumes and sets, and some of those special effects, like rocket ships flying and stuff, especially in high definition, it doesn't do it any favours either. Are not the best you can possibly imagine. But for me, they work perfectly.
And see, I think they're just perfect the way they are, because part of it is a throwback to the 1936 serial, right?
I've always thought
part
of
it is
nobody understands that.
Going back to the 50s when sci-fi movies and space movies were really kicking in and all you had to go on was in-camera special effects, in-camera stuff. And the thing is about it, you have to, like... I just don't think it's fair to say to a modern audience, someone like me or someone else who has never seen it, to say, oh, the special effects are really bad, but because it's 19... No, you don't say that. You say, it's awesome because it is. It's got this
thing. I was just saying, well,
it's like a warning to people, though, and then their expectation is, oh, it's going to look like crap, so what's the point? Do you know what I mean? I don't think that's fair.
I actually don't think it looks like crap, though. That's not what... So forget all that. What I was saying was, actually looks really good. Like...
It's crispy clear.
I just watched this on Blu-ray, and I wasn't expecting much, because it's always looked kind of grubby to me, this movie. Like, really dirty and kind of fuzzy. But there again, I watched it on VHS, right?
And now it's like
I've never even seen this on DVD, so VHS is my memory of it. So now, in 1080p, to me, I'm like, holy crap, I didn't know that looked like that. It was one of those, like, when we watched The Wizard of Oz, and you said...
Yeah.
I don't even... There was things there that I'd never seen before, just because I've always watched it on a small screen, and they've always been kind of fuzzy. On this, the detail on the costumes was the one thing where I was like, this is, like, pretty... These costumes are really well made. Like, I mean, whoever did the costume in is pretty amazing.
There's a lot of detail, yeah.
Yeah, and the colours, like, you know, the first scene where you get to Mongol... Is that what it's called, Mongol?
I'm not sure.
It doesn't seem right. But when you get to Ming's planet, and you get to... There's the big chamber sequence with all the different races stood there.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was saying it reminds me of Wizard of Oz. There's a colourful... It's like a sci-fi Wizard of Oz scene. It's like colourful, and you want to know more about it. You know, it's real enchanting. Like, so I don't know. All right, how did you feel about it?
The whole of it?
And you didn't know anything about it, and
I
tried to tell you a few things, but you didn't want to know.
Don't want to know, because I just wanted to watch it. Like, the first time you watched it, you would have just been watching it, right? Now,
yeah.
I'm a 42-year-old woman. Mature woman. So, watching it, I have to separate my two things. My view of, obviously, women's roles in movies and in any kind of storytelling over the last thousands of years or whatever. So I'll separate that. Number two, this sort of like fantasy driven save the day kind of story. I love them, but I don't... This is very specific to, I think, boy, man thing. Because...
Oh, totally.
So I'm watching it, I forget all that. I'm just like, okay, it's just an awesome... It's crazy. It's got to be... And I even thought while I was watching it, this has to be stringed together by people who are just laughing their asses off, thinking, what are we doing? Making this crazy movie. And then you hear from the writer and, you know, like, we weren't taking it seriously. And we don't know why anybody else takes it seriously.
And it's also late 70s, early 80s. So it really feels like a 70s movie in terms of, like, I keep thinking of Caligula when I'm watching it.
I've never seen that.
Like, it almost had, like, it's very sexual, like, when it doesn't really need to be a lot of the time, and it, this is like a movie.
That's what I'm saying.
Kids watch this movie.
It's totally catered to a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah, and
like 100%.
How old would I have been when I saw it?
Well, I was 18 in 86.
Probably been 12 or something. 13,
right?
Maybe.
So if in 80, I would have been 6 years younger than that. So I would have been 12, and you would have been a year younger than me. Or 2 years younger
than
me.
Like
so 10, 11.
Like in England, just starting high school, so...
10, 11 years old.
Yeah, 11 years old. So, yeah, that's when I would have seen it, because I saw it on the cinema. And then
yeah, because even the one scene where, oh my God, they go to the place where they're doing the ritual with the thing
that frightened me to death when
now,
I was
the thing was, though, when they're approaching, and they're, like, hiding around the site, and she's like, I love to listen to the initiation, you know, and I'm like, the sounds that little tribe of men are making...
It sounded like they were fucking each other.
Yeah, I was like, no, it was like this.
Yeah, I know.
But like a young man's voice.
He does have.
I was like, holy shit. Yeah, and then you're whipping the girl without her top on, and then you've got the other girl.
Without
her
top.
You got her in the red leotard with her back showing, and they're whipping her, she's held down by these four golden arms.
Pretty awesome.
Also, she uses sex at every opportunity to string along every man.
And like, men are really easy.
Including her father. There's a weird
sexual
thing.
No, that's always been weird for me, even as a kid. When I watched that,
and where she like twirls
massages
his beard,
and says something to him, there's kind of like, there's some weird shit going on between them.
Totally.
I did think, Ming must fuck his daughter, but we don't see that part, but I mean, he must, like.
Because there's a weird, but then when it's time to torture her and to kill her, he doesn't give a shit. No. He's done, he's fine with that. So.
Or is it like he knows she'd like it?
I think that I have too much life in my mind sometimes to fully understand. I mean, I totally get it. Right? It's made by a bunch of men who are making some send-up of Flash Gordon with a big budget. You've got, you know, Dino De Laurentiis, you've got this writer guy, you've got them, you know, I mean, it's almost like a culture of complete decadence that they have been thrown all this money and they're going to make this crazy insane movie. That reminds me of a couple of movies I'll get to. You know,
that's like, why I think of Caligula.
Late 70s, 80s.
It's Caligula was a high-budget porn.
Indulgent thing.
Made by Penthouse. On a huge budget with major Hollywood stars in it. But it was a hardcore porno movie, essentially. That would never get made these days, ever. Like, I mean, movies... There are high-budget porno movies, but not ones that just penetrate the mainstream. Like,
so to speak.
But not ones that are in theaters at the end of the street that you can go and see. I mean, it's decadence. Like, it was a weird, like, time. And the 70s was a real sexual time, and it kind of went into everything, like, it seemed to me. I mean, I've seen a lot of 70s movies where you're like, it's so sexual, like, everything about this.
Everything is about... And, I mean, I didn't dislike it, obviously. I think it's actually, like you said, enchanting, kind of, because it's so... You gotta just get into the story and get into the whole, you know, Flesh
Gordon.
Yeah,
you have to leave everything and just do it.
Every man's man who wants to... Well, he's not every man's man. He's like the beautiful football player guy who has nothing on his side except for his ethics and his morality.
And his athleticism.
And his determination. And, like, every decision he makes is for the right. Of course, when the girl gets on his lap and he's like, oh, she's really turning me on. That's his only moment of weakness that he almost comes into. But... Overall, I say it totally panders to that low thing in men. I mean, I have to be honest. That's what I mean. Every woman, the one woman picks up a gun, and the one woman, the princess, has some power because she's kind of leading all these men around with her sexuality. But ultimately, what is she gets, you know, she can be tossed away by her father for nothing more than, you know, her treasonous whatever. You know what I mean? Like, she's useless. She's nothing. And then the woman, what's her name? The main chick.
Dale Arden.
Dale, yeah.
She's
almost like
she... damsel in distress.
Right, and...
But then she has a bit of Princess Leia to her at
exactly,
some point.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. She picks up a gun and does a little
bit there. And then she's Princess Leia
there.
For a few minutes, and then she's damsel in distress again, like...
And then there's this weird, like, he's gonna marry her, but really, he's only... He can fuck her anytime he wants, so why is this whole marriage thing involved?
He tries to fuck her, but she kind of tricks him out of it.
All he has to do is drug her again. So what's the deal with the wedding? You know what I mean? Like, that whole thing, I was like, I'm not sure I understand
this. I love the
this.
Wedding vows, though.
Except...
In fact, we should have just had those wedding vows at our wedding.
I'm sure somebody has. Do you take her to be your... What is it? For the hour.
Yeah.
For the hour, yes.
Yeah.
And then shoot her into space when you're done with her. Yes.
Yeah, do you...
The damsel promise, in distress.
Do you promise not to shoot her into space? Until the time comes that you are a finished with it.
You know, I think I have gone so... I don't know what it is. I understand the perception that women are weaker. I understand the perception. I don't understand what it's rooted in, except culture. Like, men have decided that they're always going to be our savior men and whatever, and we're always supposed to go, oh, thank you for saving me, and now I'll let you screw me whenever you want, and we'll have a happy life. I don't get that. I think I was raised in a way...
But this was another time.
Not just another time. I was thinking about in modern movies and TV shows do a lot of the same thing.
I guess they do, yeah. I mean, there are some movies that go against
that
grain.
Why do we respond to that? I don't get it fully, except that, you know...
But men just want women to be, subservient.
Oh, as if. Yeah, all men want us to be subservient and yet want us to...
No, I mean, there is something in certain men or whatever that they see women like that. You know, the like the old 50s ideal of a housewife. Kind of, you know what I'm saying?
As a sexual concubine.
Sexual
and
concubine
make my
slash
dinner.
Slave.
And the thing is, that's very disposable, right? Make my dinner, let me screw you. And yet, if I'm in danger and I'm beautiful, you will conquer all of the universe to save me.
And they ham all that up. I mean, from the
I'm not putting that against this movie. I'm saying it stirs that up in me. That I think, and then I start thinking about other movies that do or don't have female leads, and I'm looking at a poster right behind you, which I actually appreciate, because I think Quentin Tarantino, Ramirez, they have a different take.
Rodriguez.
I always go there.
That's like Romero and Rodriguez mixed together, right?
Like,
this is the poster for Planet Terror.
Correct. Where you have even footing, really. A woman is, you know, kind of in charge of her own destiny, and the dude is
or
the
Kill
bad
Bill
guy.
Or something like
and
that.
And the woman with the bullet, I mean, the gun for the leg.
Something
and
that
like
goes
that.
Against the grain of a woman stereotype, I guess. Then there are movies that do it. Tarantino does do it, especially. Because look at the lady in The Inglourious Basterds, for instance.
Correct.
You know, or any of his movies, I think.
I mean, you still mix in there's still always this mixture of sexuality and control. I don't know if that's human or what, but this movie, specifically, being my age, having lived through the very late 70s, or all of the 70s and the 80s, and see the progression, and I want to tell, you know, but you know what, the thing is, I still know couples who have that weird thing of, oh, you're my man, and if anybody insults me, you'll be right there to punch him in the head. You know, that kind of shit? I don't get it. I get it. I don't like it. But I like this movie. I do. I was completely enthralled. The story is crazy. Because
the story's not...
It's just like, I don't get it fully, but whatever.
No.
But I love the idea that this Ming guy who rules the whole universe...
And he is awesome.
Just wants to toy with the Earth and, like, shake us up a little bit and then destroy
us. That's how you explain things that happen on the Earth, natural disasters.
Right.
Nothing to do with natural. They're to do with Ming, like, having a game. Like,
why is he the leader of the universe?
Pressing some buttons.
I don't get it.
Well, that's his backstory and stuff, I guess, that we don't get to see yet. But the movie, I mean, you're never going to get to see it. I don't know. Maybe they'll...
Probably there is somewhere an explanation.
I mean, they're comic books, so maybe the comic books explain it. But as far as I remember, and I did read some of the comic books, it was literally the same thing every week. Like, the Earth was in danger, they met up, they had a fight, Ming died, but Ming didn't really die.
Flash always put on his tank top and he was ready to go.
And his muscles were So, you know, it's a very nostalgic movie for me. So I can't really say it's bad.
No,
even
I don't.
Though,
and it's not bad to me at all.
And I think this is, like... I don't recall it looking this good. They've remixed it in Dolby DTS HD, but I don't particularly think the sound felt very remixed to me. It all felt like it was coming from the front. There wasn't really any exciting, like, oh, you could have put the explosions going around you and stuff. That didn't seem to happen in this. Also, I feel like Queen's score didn't sound as good as it could on this Blu-ray. Do you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like I didn't think there was any bass. I thought it felt tinny all the time, the soundtrack. But there again, I'm thinking, yes, they have remixed it into Dolby DTS or whatever, but it still sounds like an 80s movie. Do you know what I mean? It didn't sound...
But I wouldn't want it to be in the other way.
Well, they actually make a clip all remixed.
Oh, right.
And when I was watching it, I was thinking, it sounds better than I remember, because I watched it on a television when I was a kid with a little speaker. So this sounds good in a 5.1 surround experience, but there's not much subwoofer going on. It's not like a... Like I expect... Like The Godfather, for instance. That was a 70s movie that was redone for Blu-ray. It sounded like a new movie, because they'd done a lot of work to it.
But if Flash Gordon wasn't a massive success box office-wise, which it was not, and now they're putting out on Blu-ray, how much do you think they really wanted to invest? I mean, let's boil it down to the numbers here.
Well, this is the 30th anniversary of the movie, actually.
I think it'll get a revisit. I think people will be like, oh my god, that's fucking awful and awesome at the same time.
I do. I feel it's the kind of movie like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Rocky Horror Picture Show is not a good... I've seen it. It's not a good movie. Like this movie. It's not a great movie.
But something gets you in the gut.
But there's something about it, like this guy said on the extras, like a cult classic.
Yeah.
There's something about that cult classic. It doesn't mean it's good. It means it just fits with you at a certain point in your life, and then you're never going to really lose it.
I agree.
You're never going to forget The Wizard of Oz. You're never going to not want to rewatch it.
Nope.
I would never not
want to... I'm trying to think of other movies like this that have that effect on me. And there are a few, but, until I see the credits come up or I hear the beginning of it on, American Movie Classics or TLC or something, I don't think about it. Not TLC, but American Movie Classics or whatever. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my god.
I mean, obviously Star Wars does for me.
Yeah, it does.
And,
yeah.
Original.
Da, 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 da,
and this. And one of my recommendations for this week also does it. There are a lot.
I have some horror movies from the 80s. I think Poltergeist is one of those that does that to me. Like, makes as soon as it starts,
Jaws.
I'm like, yes, yes, yes.
There are ones that stick with you.
Exorcist. Because I was 11
Absolutely.
Or 12 when I first watched that, and seriously, now I'm just like, I can't
not
watch it.
I like to say
it.
I can rewatch The Exorcist over and over, but it freaking does my head in.
Oh, me too. It's
like, I want to watch it, but I don't want to sit
every 5 or 6 years, I can
watch handle it. Like, I feel like...
Or the beginning of Halloween, I'm always like, oh, I'll leave this
music,
on the TV.
The music, Friday the 30th, there's ones that stick. This sticks with me as, yes, Star Wars is my first love of sci-fi movies when I was a child. But this one, you could say it's not on a par with Star Wars, but I say, in my mind, it's a different thing, but it still fits there. I mean, I watch this as much as I did Star Wars.
It's like me with Bewitched. As soon as that theme song comes on, da-da, da-da, I'm just, transported back to those days when I was, laying on the floor with my elbows on the floor, my hands...
And I did think of this, watching this today, several times. It came into my mind of me watching it in front of the TV in the 80s, what I was doing, what I was thinking, and thinking, like I said, that princess was she was mind blowing to me as a young man. I was like, holy, I don't think I've ever, I'm 11 years old. I've not really seen many half naked women. So this princess is that costume she's wearing at the beginning when she's in the throne thing.
Yeah.
It's pretty near to nothing, right? And I can remember seeing that and thinking, holy crap, what the hell is that? So maybe this was the first introduction to women for me.
Oh, great.
what I'm saying is...
And look what you ended up marrying in your life.
Well, yeah.
Same kind of chick.
Same chick. but yeah.
And by the way, we looked her up, and recently she still looks quite nice.
We'll talk about it later in the cast. But there was a lot of things to this movie when you're an 11-year-old boy. Like you say, a lot of his sexual stuff.
And that, da-da, Flash to the rescue.
Yeah. And there's an extra on this disc that I'll talk about in a minute, but he nailed all the things I was thinking, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Every single thing. There's a moment where Flash jumps up at the camera. Yeah. When I was a boy, that sent tingles through my, you know, like the hairs on the back of your neck.
Stuff. Aww.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, like, I know exactly what you mean.
Maybe not now, but I still remember the feeling of watching that when I was a kid, and it's just, I want to like, that's the end of the movie. I want to turn this back on again, rewind.
I know, it's exactly what you mean. It lifts you up, like, yeah. And you can't explain why, except that it's like music from your youth or anything else. There's something, if you've had a good experience with something, even now, it just, you're just, yeah. like, sucked right back into it. And I think that's a...
So, you know, it's a sci-fi movie. So overall, the movie, for me, it's just pure nostalgia. I have to own it.
And to me, it's 100% entertainment.
And you have no ties to this movie.
None whatsoever. It's not,
and now you don't even.
But I would sit right now and watch it again, because there would be so many things I didn't notice or didn't look at. And, you know, I'm a film lover person, and I love the special effects where you go, oh my god, I can see that piece of plastic, or I can see that boom, or whatever it is. And I love that.
Did you notice, and I did notice this time, and High Def was purely responsible for it, but you know the ball thing that floats? It had two wires hanging straight from it. Like, not, they weren't hidden. They were just big ass wires hanging. You could totally.
Those were the antenna.
No, they were it. When the camera panned out, there was antennas, but there was two wires just like straight up. No hiding them. I don't think they want. Or maybe there was no way to, like.
Or maybe they were hanging from wires in the spaceship, just on a wire.
But, you know, there was things like that where you're just like. I didn't notice that when I was a kid, but in high definition.
And in a movie where you know they're not taking themselves 100% seriously, it's lovely to see that stuff. In a movie where they are trying to take themselves seriously and you see it, then you're like, oh,
yeah,
my
if
God,
you saw
it's
it
embarrassing.
In, if you saw it in Star Wars,
like Lord of the Rings,
why didn't they fix
like
it?
In Lord, of the, Rings,
Lord
we,
of the Rings.
When we have a problem with some of the special effects, you're like, you know they're trying really hard to make them perfect.
The end scene of the third Lord of the Rings film, whenever it happens, we both like groan. Where the hobbits are stood in the. There's a big celebration going on, and the hobbits are stood there. And the hobbits aren't even... They're in some other different room, because they're a different colour to everything else. And we always look at each other and go, what the hell? Why couldn't they get them on the set that day? Or what was going on
there? It's because they're smaller, you see.
Yeah, it just looks shit. It looks really bad. Like, it's like... You know.
And in that movie, they're not trying to be funny.
did you just run out of time and you couldn't finish that? And it had to...
I think they really think it looks alright.
No, I don't think they do.
I do. But anyway.
This movie's, you know, it's...
I recommend it.
I'm absolutely mind blown by how good it looks on Blu-ray. That was one thing I wanted to mention. It was,
When you paused on that one chick's face was right there, it was so
when I
clear.
First, the very opening scene, like, because I was like, I can't wait to see Flash Gordon in high def, because I want to see how good it looks. Probably won't look that good, because it's old. I can't imagine it looking that good. And the first scene is like Ming, with, like, an interface up firing.
Yeah.
Like, and it looked crappy. I was like, oh, my God, it kind of looks like the... I remember. And then, after the credit sequence, which still kind of looked kind of fuzzy and stuff, the movie started at, and you saw Flash Gordon on the runway where the planes come in. And it just looked like...
Perfect.
I was like, this looks like a movie from today. Like,
yeah, it does.
It looks perfect.
And that first part, I don't care what you say, I hate to disagree with you yet again, but that first part was not the right aspect ratio.
Right, and that's nothing to do with
I'm saying whoever put that... I'm not saying it is. I'm saying whoever put that on there, the very opening sequence is squished. It's not in the right aspect ratio.
You mean the credit sequence with the comic books and everything?
Yep.
Yeah. I did notice that, but I knew that it was going to... that you don't need to adjust anything on a Blu-ray, so...
No, but I'm saying if you notice that when you're watching it, it is wrong, and as soon as the movie kicks in, it'll be right.
Yeah. And the movie is crisp, clear. There's... portions of dirt occasionally, which I kind of expect, because it's not a restored film, it's just a scanned in negative. But it looks the best I've ever seen.
Oh, looks
it
good.
And I was highly surprised, because I thought this is probably a movie where I'll be writing on this week about this isn't the kind of movie you need to buy a Blu-ray disc for, but I actually think it is.
I think it is worth it.
It's about the colours and the it's a colourful.
It sort of lifts the veil a little bit, because a lot of the costuming and stuff is crystal clear that it is not... well, you know, some people argue that we have too much CGI these days. So if you are one of those people, you're going to love it.
There's
because
none.
You're... Yeah, there's no... it is what it is. And like you said, it's almost like a play. The set, the costumes. So you just love it for what it is. And you go like, wow. I mean, there might be 50 costumes on the screen at once. And you think, I think to myself, man, that's a lot of making. A lot of people put a lot of time and effort into all of that. Everybody's different and all the different soldiers. I mean, because it's all crystal clear, you're kind of like dazzled by it.
The beginning is kind of impressive because there's different races of...
Yeah.
There's only about five races or something, but it seems like there's a lot of stuff going on, doesn't it, you know? But it looks...
And then the look of it does do a disservice to, like, the reptile people because they really just look like people with the
hand puppets.
Rubber thing on their head. But you just get over it, you know? You're just like, oh, that's a reptile person.
Those always remind me of hand puppets, the ones that are in the wall.
Because their eyes are into their mouth. Like,
inside of glove, like...
And you notice the Hawkmen are like...
Yeah.
A few of them, like, tilting their head around all weird, and then other ones didn't, so it was, like, kind of funny.
There was some bizarre shit going on, but that's the movie. And, you know, the movie's scored by Queen, like I said earlier. That Flash Gordon song's iconic to me, and there is some other songs of... Well, there's not some other song. There's some other Queen music in here, but it's all really the motif of the Flash thing. But Brian May plays the wedding... Here Comes the Bride in his guitar style,
which of course in that world would be the same wedding march that
because he's watching Ming, he's watching Earth closely, he takes all this shit and then he goes off and fucks his
daughter. Down to the cast, oh my gosh.
So yeah, the cast, we've got Sam J. Jones as Flash Gordon. I have no idea who he is. I've never seen him again after he was in some TV show, and I was reading some trivia earlier. He was in a TV show on American television, and Dino De Laurentiis saw him, wanted him for the part.
He was the host of a game show. Yeah, that's where he saw him.
But I have no idea.
Me either.
And I've not seen him since. I don't...
He looks like the type who might have been on, like, Dallas and on Love Boat,
like a handsome,
and Fantasy Island and stuff.
He was supposed to be a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, handsome American.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading the trivia also, and he doesn't have blue eyes, but they made him blue contact lenses, but he couldn't wear them because they irritated his eyes. So he's a green-eyed, blonde-haired American. But
who made him that shit? Hitler?
I don't know.
You had to be blonde-haired, blue-eyed.
To be the savior of the universe.
Yeah, let's get over that, shall we?
So,
never mind that I'm blonde-haired and blue-eyed.
And the thing is, I've got this attachment to this movie. It was never about Flash Gordon.
No,
is that
weird? I didn't either.
So that's not what is the big deal for me. Now, the big deal for me was the women, but Ming was the big deal for me. I loved Ming.
He was good, man.
Ming's played by Max von Sydow.
He took it semi-seriously, I think.
He did. I think he's awesome as it.
He is awesome.
I think do you know the menacing feel that Darth Vader has?
Yes.
He has exactly that.
I agree, completely.
They obviously said, you can tell even in the way... When he's first revealed...
He approaches...
It's... Do you know what? We want to make this... Star Wars has already been... We need this to be as menacing as Star Wars was. And it's very obvious they're trying to do it. It doesn't succeed 100%, but... It's menacing enough. And he does something right near the beginning. With the sacrifice thing.
Yeah.
That makes you immediately clear that this guy just doesn't fuck around. Like, you can't mess with him. And then, you know...
Yeah.
He orders his own daughter to be flogged.
Tortured.
And, yeah. You know, so...
And then tossed away.
Yeah, so he's not... The big deal for me was Ming. I wanted to see more Ming adventures. It wasn't Flash Gordon, and that's a funny thing, because...
Yeah.
Flash Gordon, to me...
Can you say, honestly, that Star Wars was about Skywalker?
Not really. It's about... For me, it was about Han Solo, right? He was the hero.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Darth Vader.
Darth Vader, the bad guy, but for... Star Wars, for me, was like Princess Leia and Han Solo. I like them the best.
Really?
There's a lot of things to like in that movie, though, isn't there? You could say Chewbacca's your favorite. Or
Chewbacca's my
or
favorite.
Or the robots are your favorite. You know, like...
Chewbacca and Obi-Wan.
So, no, I was never the Luke Skywalker. I mean, but, yeah, I could understand why
people...
Yeah,
he's supposed to be the hero guy, and yet you think more... You think Darth Vader.
And this movie's weird, because obviously it's called Flash Gordon. Everything is Flash Gordon, but it was never about Flash Gordon for me. Because I know he's going to save the day. obviously, right? That's what he's there for. I mean, the song says it. So, secondly, there's Melody Anderson as Dale Arden.
She was good. I like her. She was in other 80s movies as well, but I always liked her.
I don't know her either.
She had the sort of pouty... She had moments, though, of... trying to defy the woman in woman in distress or whatever, damsel in distress thing, and yet, and there was a lot more. I could see that, you know, like on the brink of the 80s when women's roles start change a little bit, you could
I
see
think
that.
She
kind
did
of
a good job. Somebody said to her, you know, these 1930s serials that were
exactly
popular, be like that, and I think she did a good job of being like.
But add, she had moments
a
of
modern
clarity. Even more than Princess Leia, like, you know, when she's convincing the slave girl to drink the stuff and she kind of lightens up a bit. And, you know, I think she was really, I'd have to look her up to see what else she's been in. But I know she's in other 80s movies as a young starlet kind of woman.
And Max von Sydow as Emperor Ming, I don't need to say much about him.
It was really good.
He's the star of the show. He totally is.
His costume is a bit, like, not menacing. It's almost comical nowadays, but when he starts talking for real, you're like, okay, this guy
It's exactly Darth Vader. It's like, his costume. This viewing, especially. When he comes out of his thing and he's got his little toy sword.
And his weird eyebrows all painted on.
That's what kind of... He comes out in his little costume. You know that one, that black... like a hairstyle. Hat.
Yeah.
He's wearing that, and he's got his little toy plastic sword.
He's got Lego hair on, because it's like this.
And it's obviously a little toy plastic sword. And he walks out, and he's supposed to be really... The guy's asking him about what they should do, and he's giving some orders, and...
He's got that ring. Why does he need a sword? I don't get it.
I don't know. It's quite hard to, like, take him seriously, but...
But when he starts talking, then you're like, okay, this guy is serious, okay.
And then you've got Topol as Dr. Hans Zarkov, who I never understood that name, Topol. That was his stage name, I guess. But he's been in several things, and wasn't he in, like, a Superman movie? Anyway, I think he plays the mad scientist guy quite well. And it's quite a funny scene when you first meet him. And I don't want to explain the whole thing, but when they, like... Where's the telephone? Is it in there? It always kind of made me think, are people...
Didn't say, is it in there? He said, the telephone's in here.
Yeah, is in there. In this thing that looks exactly like a rocket ship, if you just looked up. but the thing is, it's like that old horror movie thing where they say, it's down there in the basement. Oh, okay, I'll go and have a look. It's like that.
I'm going to go in this cave and look for the thing I dropped, even though there's a giant spider on the loose.
Yeah,
you know?
It's the same. But it's funny. And then you've got Princess Aura, who is Amelia Multi. Is that right? Multipass.
You're making me want to watch that again.
She's the sexy daughter. She's...
She's good. She's, to me, the star of the show.
She's an 11-year-old's wet dream, I would say.
Not a 40-year-old's wet dream?
In fact, I discussed it with...
come on.
I discussed it with my friend this week. We were talking about Flash Gordon, and both of us, the first thing we said was like, oh, do you remember that princess? Like, and I... Obviously, I always... There's scenes in this that are so, like, she's wearing next to nothing. There's the torture scene, which is, like, her buttocks are, like, absolute... You know, they made it so it's...
Her buttocks. How sweet.
They made it so it's the perfect view.
Angle,
angle, everything. Like, it's like Megan Fox leaning over the bike in Transformers.
There you go. A modern example.
Yeah.
Of how women are trained. Girls are trained to be the damsel in distress. Can be sassy. You can be handy with a gun, but you still need to be saved. And boys are trained to think you have to come along and beat the shit out of everybody. Uh-huh. And then in the end, grab the girl lusciously and kiss her as if
you could put Transformers alongside this movie, couldn't you? Because it's... I know that one's about robots and stuff, but the damsel in distress, etc. thing kind of... sexy ladies.
She's not so much a damsel in distress as she is this spunky female nothing.
Which, you know, Dale Arden has also in this movie.
Because to me, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, she, Marion, is like a brilliant female character. She needs to be saved a couple of times, right? But overall, she's one of my favorite from when I was young women.
She gives him shit. Like, she tells him that she...
And in the beginning, she owns that bar, she drinks that guy under the table, and yet there's a mixture of how, you know, she needs him and he needs her kind of a thing, so.
So, yeah, Princess Aura.
She's good, though. I liked her. I think, for my opinion,
an Italian
she had the
actress,
biggest
let's say.
Impact for me on the movie, in a good way. I thought she was really, she did a good job, and
she had quite a big impact on me.
And
So, next, Timothy Dalton turns up, the Time Lord himself.
I feel like he, Time Lord slash James Bond.
Prince Baron.
I feel like he's a... Maybe would it have been beneath him a bit at the time?
Somebody did say in the extras that this director had access to big name actors.
Very serious actors.
So
right.
He was obviously brought on board by the director who had fingers in...
Dino De Laurentiis is also there to produce, so... I feel like, I mean, did a fine job. It's just that he elevates different scenes and dialogue a little bit higher than maybe what the rest of it is. I don't know if it's his
He also accent. Has a fabulous mustache.
It's a fabulous mustache, and that...
He's based on, like, Robin Hood.
That's what they said, but...
I always got the idea of Robin.
Like, Batman and Robin.
The costume.
Because he has that weird...
It's like a grass version of...
He's got, like, a belt with his tucked-in shirt, and it's woven. Like, it's...
It's awesome. Really. I mean, it's Timothy Dalton in a weird leaf suit.
Leotard.
Leaf suit.
What about that battle on that thing? That was pretty awesome. That was one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Yeah, that circular thing.
Used to freak me out. Like
total. They can make a new video game of this movie. That'd be awesome.
Kind of like Discs of Tron. Remember the...
No.
You've seen Tron.
I fell
Tron.
Asleep.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, there's a... It's like
Where spikes
that.
Come up and everything?
It's like a booby-trapped...
Because that circular thing and the spikes start coming up. I mean, that was awesome.
Yeah, and they have whips.
Yeah.
It's real old school. And, yeah, spikes, whips, and a remote control.
Yeah, they got a great big remote control.
Pass me the remote control, he shouts or something.
Pass me the remote control.
So, yeah, speaking of that, that's Brian Blessed as Prince Vulton. Is the head of the bird people.
I think he, more than any... The hawk people. I think he, more than anybody else, gets the campiness. Because he does the funny gestures and the winky thing and, like, his voice is...
I don't find that shit funny, right? You know, where he's bonking people on the head and stuff. But, when I was a kid, I loved that part. It kind of made me giggle.
Like, yeah, of course.
And now it still makes me giggle because I think of me giggling as a kid at that. It's not... If I saw it now, fresh, I would be like, oh, God, come on.
You got to have that, though, because you don't want to think this is supposed to be taken seriously. So you have that little bit of, like, Three's Company-esque, you know,
Blackadder. It's the Three Stooges.
The stumbly, but he's also very bold and brave and all that stuff. But I think he's the perfect guy because he's, like, real booming voice and, like, you know.
And then finally I put Richard O'Brien as Fico down, who is the Rocky Horror Show guy, the bald guy. I only put him down because...
Who's he?
Huh?
Who was he?
He's from the Rocky Horror Show.
I haven't
he
seen
wrote
that.
And he created the Rocky Horror Show. He's also in it.
I haven't seen
but
it.
But you know the bald guy in the forest.
The guy who dropped down into...
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
that guy.
He's the creator and writer of the Rocky Horror Show. And
that needs to be added to the list of movies that I should have seen, but I haven't.
Yeah, you can probably pick that up on Netflix. I'm sure I'll watch it. It's not my favourite, but he is... That's why I mentioned him. So this is directed by Mike Hodges. He also directed Get Carter, the original, with Michael Caine. Yeah. And The Omen 2, Damien, which I really liked a lot.
Did you? I don't remember it.
No, I liked it. In fact, I almost liked it better than the first one. The third one I didn't like.
Freaking creepy, man.
Yeah. And he did a bunch of other TV stuff. But as far as the extras, when they were talking about the director, he was a big deal to them, wasn't he? He sounded like he was. He'd have already made The Omen 2, I guess. So, and that was a big hit. So,
wasn't that in the 80s? Omen 2?
I thought that was end of the 70s.
Oh.
Like, I thought The Omen was like 75.
Oh, maybe.
DVD...
Were you just touching your armpit?
Blu-ray
just
extras.
Asking.
No, I was scratching underneath my arm. So Blu-ray
not
extras
technically
on,
your armpit.
On this Blu-ray. It has a couple of extras, not many.
Not many and not enough for me.
But it has Alex Ross, renowned comic artist, on Flash Gordon.
That was a good one.
Which is awesome because he's
the guy.
I feel
who drew
like he's me.
He drew the. He drew the cover. Just to say who he is, he drew the cover and he did.
He's a comic book guy,
right?
Artist.
And he's doing a comic book version of the movie. It looked like from sketches they were showing during his thing, and everything he said, you just kept going, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like, that's exactly what... Because he feels
he's,
like...
He's reminiscing about the movie.
Yeah.
And saying he's the guy who's probably watched this movie more than anybody in the world, because he loves it. Everything about it.
Every once in a while, he just has to watch it.
And if you tell people you love it, and they say, oh, God, that was terrible, they just don't get it.
Right.
Which is right.
Right.
When
you love something, and you truly want other people to enjoy it the same way you do, it's so... It's difficult to think, why don't you understand why this is awesome? But then again, for this, it's good to be its own little pocket of people, I think.
And when we talk about DVD covers and like, we know that this one was designed specifically. This was out on DVD 3 years ago, and that's when he designed this cover. But it was designed for the anniversary of the... And
it looks like an action figure, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's actually really good. I mean, it's a comic book.
Yeah.
I'd like it as a poster. I think it's a good cover. I think this is a good cover.
It's a little too Thor for me, with the sword up in the air, because he doesn't really fight with a sword very much.
No, but it looks...
You know what I'm saying?
It looks heroic, and I like the... And you saw him doing it in the extra.
But you know me, I'm going to like any time I watch somebody do
something. Yeah, and then there's a second extra, which is writing, and this one's also really good, writing a classic screenwriter, Lorenzo Semple Jr. So you meet the screenwriter guy who...
He's funny. You also said he's totally, I get it.
Has a really interesting, because obviously he lived and breathed and made this movie, you know, wrote this movie. He has a very interesting stories to tell that you... I was kind of like, no way, that's just like...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't feel... Like he was saying, I had to go meet some guy. The guy.
Yeah, and some of it can crack your illusions or your delusions, whatever you have for this movie, if you truly are devoted. Like, you think it's one thing and he's going to tell you...
My favorite story...
He wrote it, it's not what you think.
My favorite story he tells, a little story, is that the art director... guy.
Yeah.
They would go on the set, and he said it was supposed to be a forest location, and the set, he'd walk in the room, and it'd look like an underground cave, and he'd say to the guy, this isn't what we want a forest.
This wasn't
location.
In the script, and the guy says...
And the guy said, I don't ever read the script, so...
And plus, that guy was Italian, this guy's American. Neither one of them spoke
French.
But they both spoke some French, so that's how they communicated. Stuff like that is interesting, and this guy was just like... It's great that this is a cult favorite, but, like, we weren't taking it seriously.
He said,
I
wish we could have advertised it at the time as this will be a cult favorite in the future, because maybe you watch it. Maybe those people who do watch it now would have come and seen it.
But the problem with cult favorites is those people don't buy movie tickets.
Yeah. And then the final extra on here is the first episode of the 1936 version with Buster Crabbe, which is essentially the first act of this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
In the old style. I think they should have put the whole thing on, really. Like, I have to say,
I find her super sexy, that chick.
Yeah,
like,
very...
Her voice and her... She's not like a weakly damsel in distress kind of a chick. And that's what I was saying about movies from the 30s and early 40s. Particularly like Katharine Hepburn and stuff. If you watch, it kind of shatters that idea. Like, I have in my mind that all movies from the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s have, you know, the sweet little woman who has no... They're actually more meatier roles, almost meatier than the modern version of her. What's her name?
Dale Arden.
Right. So I really liked her. And the guy was pretty cool. I mean, they seemed to take it more seriously.
Buster Crabbe was super famous back in the, you know, but yeah, it's...
What was he in there? Just the son of a professor? Was he a football player?
We didn't get to that, did we? In this first episode.
I mean, they didn't explain. They said he was coming and...
But it's in the vibe of... And it's kind of funny, because when we watched The Wolfman, another Universal Blu-ray the other week, and there was the original Wolfman movie, it actually opens almost like this movie. It could have been the same set.
I think it's just the style. And if you put together a bunch of movies today...
Men in suits with their hands in the pockets, standing talking.
You
know, it's very... almost identical. I was watching thinking... There was this distinct way of making something in those days, and that's what they did.
There is now, though. When you think about movies like Funny People and that genre, the Judd Apatow, those all start and have comedy, romantic comedy movies start a certain way, drama movies start a certain way.
And
so.
This started, another thing was they were both looking for a space telescope on both. On the Wolfman and on this one. So it's kind of weird.
Must have been a new thing then.
Yeah. And then it also says extras and more, but there wasn't and more, in my opinion, unless BD Live has something. But I didn't check out BD Live, so...
You can't on
I feel that it's light on extras. I would like... definitely like a commentary track with the writer.
I would also like one of those animated comic book things that they do sometimes. Take the original comic book and animate it a bit.
I believe that the writer, though, the guy who was... And even the guy who drew this cover would
oh, he would be an awesome commentary.
Yeah, what about Brian May on a commentary track about the creating the music for the movie?
You might not remember. Probably. Was he doing some drugs then? Maybe.
There was lots of... I felt, watching this movie, lots of moments where I felt like everybody was doing drugs.
And if you were doing drugs, scenes, and it would be better.
Do you know what I'm saying?
If I'm like, wasted man, this would be awesome.
It probably would. But I liked it not doing
Me
drugs.
Me too.
So, the conclusion for the disc, I think the disc is a bit lacking. I don't know, maybe the 40th anniversary of this movie, they'll dig up a bunch of stuff and we'll get like a super... I think the movie looks perfect. Like I say, the sound's a little bit lacking for me. But it didn't... It's the best I've ever seen it.
And you've seen it a lot.
And I still had fun. Absolute fun. I knew what was going to happen every second.
I can imagine you putting that in and just popping it on every once in a while, because it's just like one of those things, if you're doing something else but you want something going on your
computer.
It's
totally fun. It's fun. If you like sci-fi, I imagine.
Like Ron Burgundy. You haven't put him on for a while.
I did. I watched it last week.
That's one of those that you have memorized almost, because you watched it every day for
like
2 months.
Modern day classic for me. You know? Because it's not particularly old, is it? That's Anchorman.
Gankman, yeah.
I recommend this.
I do too.
Not purely for nostalgic reasons. I think people of today should see it too.
I think so, because you can't just think that Avatar or modern action movies...
There's a moment like Avatar in this movie, when they flew past the planet thing, and it's like those rocks hanging in space, and she said it's such a place. I was like, whoa, that's like Avatar.
The floating mountain looking thing.
It almost looks the same.
It did not almost look the same.
That was sarcasm.
That was your 11-year-old brain talking. But you can't, you know what I mean? Broaden your horizons a bit. Don't let, you're one of those people too, without trying to though. You want everything to just keep progressing, but I don't think it's always progression. I mean, it's always better. I think sometimes something like this, as an experience, I like seeing the flaws and stuff. I think it's good.
So, thumbs up?
Thumbs up.
Even though we don't do thumbs up.
Toes up. Nose up. Don't put your nose up at it.
Yeah, nose down. Okay, so thanks to Universal for the review. Next week's review will be, all being well, that's if it arrives on time, will be Greenberg on Blu-ray, which is Ben Stiller.
Last week was Green Zone. Next week will be Greenberg.
Interesting. I want to say you can go and enter a contest on the site. Just go to aschoolie.com and try and win something. Movie recommendations for this week. The first one's not really a movie for me, but it's something I was thinking of my childhood and something I loved, and it's Doctor Who. Like, just Doctor Who in general. I mean, there's a lot of Doctor Who to choose from, right?
So, yep.
if you like...
I've watched a few of those originals, and they're pretty good.
And, you know...
We were watching some of the very beginning ones. Now, that was totally different, but...
I saw an interview with Ozzy Osbourne this week, and he said, I love classic Doctor Who, because when an alien comes in the room, it's almost like they've got an egg carton on their head. That's about the extent of the special effects. So, yeah, it's hokey. Some of the old stuff is got interesting ideas, but they didn't
big ideas.
Maybe they didn't have the thing to pull it off fully, but it is good. And then, obviously, there's new Doctor Who, which finished this weekend.
We haven't seen the end yet.
No. And my other recommendation is the original Superman. Not the original Superman, but Superman the Christopher Reeve versions, which were around the time of Flash Gordon. Mm. And they were also my other... played a lot on the VCR movies. We had all of them. And I feel that they have some of the Flash Gordon... They're not quite as psychedelic and weird, but there is some of this kind of... The way it's made is very similar. Like, you could
It's like a step up from that, though, because when you want to start borderline, let's be more realistic, if you can say that.
But it was before CG and the special effects that were like this, practical, all of it. Like.
Practical, yeah.
Yeah, so they're my recommendations, and yours are?
And mine are Barbarella. Because I got that total vibe. Yeah, totally. That has a female lead, which is Jane Fonda, and the blind angel guy, and I need to watch it again to get it all back in my mind, but it's really trippy.
Titillating.
Titillating, because in the beginning, she's naked, floating in the capsule, you know? I remember the first time I saw it on HBO, I was probably 10 or 11, and I'm sitting there like, and I was late at night probably, because I used to watch TV like all night long, very, very unsimilar to how I am now, watching movies alone, and I was just like, oh my god, what is this movie? Because, you know, when you're a kid, you're anything that's nudity, you're like, oh, I'm being bad, I'm gonna watch it, and I was just like, holy crap, and then the whole thing, I was like this, doing the thing where my elbows are on the floor, laying in front of our crappy console television, with my eyes wide open, like, oh my god, you know, I wasn't at my house, I was at either my brother or my sister, because they lived in a bigger town with cable.
One for me that would fit into that category is Dudley Moore in 10.
You would have been older than a kid, though.
I was...
You're a teenager.
Younger,
then.
And it was on. And it's not really for kids.
No, and you were just like, oh my god.
And Bo Derek's...
Arthur is one of those movies that as soon as it starts, I'm there. Yeah. I mean, I know every word of that movie. Oh, yeah. So my other... recommendations: Buckaroo Banzai, which also had that weird 80s sort of because Flash Gordon has an element of rebel against the tyranny that's happening. So did Star Wars, and so is Buckaroo Banzai, sort of in a more idea kind of way, I guess. I don't remember it fully, but I remember being like, "That's awesome!" when I was watching it as a kid. So,
and my third
is that Peter Weller?
Yes.
Not Peter. Yeah, Peter
RoboCop
Weir.
RoboCop guy.
Peter Weir.
Yeah, I have to bring this up because this would be my third recommendation, even though I don't have a third recommendation, but I'll never bring it up again because I'll never remember it. It's the TV show Space 1999.
Right.
Which Flash Gordon doesn't remind me of, but it's, I used to watch that at the same time.
I'm going to just add it. Oh, I can't add it real quick. But
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a TV show that was on in England. It was an American TV show, actually, that lasted 2 seasons that... Martin Landau was the hero of it. It wasn't like Flash Gordon. I said to you, it was kind of like Alien. It was like a cross between Star Trek and Alien, but more serious than Star Trek. It was a TV show that lasted like 2 seasons, and it was scary. Probably isn't to me now, but I was a kid. And
what's it called? Spaceship 1999?
Just Space 1999.
I have to check it. See if it was on Netflix or something.
I don't think it's on Netflix, but I think we might be able to get the discs, and I really would like to see it again, because it was very progressive for the time, you know? It was a late 70s.
And I disagree with everybody who says that Star Trek wasn't serious. I don't think you're paying attention.
Star Trek had a bit of both. Some serious themes, but then some whimsy.
I mean, they were trapped in the whimsy of this kind of special effects you could do on television at the time, but the ideas were just the same as, like, Doctor Who. Humankind and war and ideology.
Come to think of it, Star Trek was quite titillating. The original series.
It had its moments.
It had a lot of sexy chicks in there. I mean...
They weren't super sexy, but he kissed them a lot, so...
Yeah, and Kirk with no shirt on and stuff, you know.
That was highly
titillating. It had that whatever's left... Whatever, yep. 70s leftover thing.
With the guy who's basically holding his chest up and this thing...
Yeah.
I think men do. The girdle look, without a girdle. Yeah.
So, they're the recommendations for this week. So, quickly, I've not got that much to say this week, but games and A-Scully stuff. I've been playing...
We talked a lot about the movie, more than normal.
This is a game from a while ago. I was playing Just Cause 2. It's not like a new game, but we dug it out last week, and me and my nephew were playing it. And it's really fun. We played it for, like, all night, I think. So... it's Just Cause 2, and I believe you can get it for $19.99 now because it's an older one, and it's really fun. Secondly, I mentioned this last week, but I was playing On Live, which I explained kind of a little bit, but it's this new service in North America. And how would you explain it?
We didn't do the video.
No, how would you explain it?
What do you mean? Just an online video game?
No, it's
service?
Like brand new. It's not Just. It's like...
I mean, it is Just. You go on there and you can play the games from their servers. It's not a game you have to download or anything. The game is running on their CPU, on their graphics card. You get the feed and you play live. It's instantaneous.
You're playing a 720p video stream of a game that's playing in a data center. Hmm. And you're playing the video stream... Like using remote desktop to play a game,
I guess.
That's the best way of explaining it. It's got a really cool interface. You can kind of watch anybody on the service
play
a game.
It's kind of futuristic-y, because if you look at the thumbnails of everybody playing games, the games are running right in front of you, like dozens of them.
Yeah.
And you just click on one, and it zooms in, and you can observe somebody else playing their game. Just follow them around.
And it's instant. Like, if there's a thumbnail of somebody playing a game, and it's not a thumbnail, it's a video.
Mm-hmm.
Live footage of them playing.
A thumbnail video.
You click on them, it zooms in immediately, and you're watching them. And then you zoom back out, go to another person. It's really slick and very... Now, we played Just Cause 2 on there, which is the PC version of Just Cause 2. And I don't know if it was that particular night, but we kept getting disconnected. Now, I've played some demos this week and not been disconnected at all, so...
I was also watching something on Netflix, yeah. Streaming, so...
Now, this is very dependent on your internet connection. At the moment, how it works, I mean, it's not a beta, it is launched. But you can't use Wi-Fi, you have to be wired to use the service. If you are on a laptop with Wi-Fi, it will tell you you better plug into the router for it to work. Which I understand, because you do need a lot of bandwidth to do this. You need a 5 megabit connection or above. We have like a 12 megabit connection. But I mean, it has to be constantly 5 megabit. If it drops at any point, you're going to get interference in your game. So there are like caveats, I guess. But they've only got one data center at the moment, which is like in Texas or somewhere. So wherever you're playing in the US, it's the US only at the moment, you're connecting to this data center in Texas. Now, they say they're going to expand the data center so they're all across the country. Now, that could make the service a lot better, because if our data center was in Columbia, which is just down the road...
Just so everybody knows, I work in a data center.
Yeah, our ping time would be, like, say our ping time's 80 milliseconds to Texas.
Yeah, the less time you get a hit to mouse.
Yeah, so like when you're playing on Xbox Live... You need a good ping time.
So how much is this service?
All right, this service is free for the first year. If you signed up a couple of weeks ago.
That's what I'm saying. It's not free. If you signed up a year from now, it won't be free. It's only free this year.
No, it's going to... Yeah, after this year, when it is a paid service, it will be $4.99 a month just to have the service. That's without playing any games. So $4.99 for... just having the application on your computer.
Per month.
But what it does do well is all the games on the service, you can buy them, which doesn't mean you own it specifically. It actually says in the text. They're called passes. So say I pick Lego Batman, and I want to play Lego Batman, and I think, oh, that looks a cool game, I'll play it now. I have three options. For $3.99, I can rent it for a night, which means I play it for 24 hours, and then I have
accesses,
to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's $3.99 for that. There's $4.99 for 5 days, or, depending on the game, like, say Lego Batman costs $29.99 in the stores. Well, they'll charge you $29.99, and that'll be it's called the Lifetime Pass, but in small print next to it, it'll say, you can play this game until... March the 27th, 2013. So don't think you're buying that game for good, because you have to be an OnLive subscriber to play it.
Right, so the best really option is the 5 day thing.
Five days. Because most of the games on there, and I was looking at them, and they're not shitty games. It's like the newest Splinter Cell, Dirt 2.
Plus demos. You played the new Harry Potter demo.
Assassin's Creed 2, Lego Harry Potter. You know, it's all the brand new games. If you can play them in a week.
Yeah,
I think it's actually a good model. $4.99. I think sometimes $5.99.
If you keep that connection going.
But for a whole week, that is a nice rental scheme, because there are games where I would pay that to just to play one game for. You know, I don't think I'd want to buy this game, but I'd like to play it. And any game that's in the store that you can purchase, you can try for 30 minutes. So you can launch any game and play it for 30 minutes, and when your 30 minutes is up, it pops up a screen and says, do you want to buy a pass now? Do you want to carry on playing, or do you just want to drop
it? My only problem is, one night should only be like $1.
It should, but it's new, and I'm imagining they're trying the prices. But I actually think $4.99, $5.99 for a whole week is fine, because that's how much Blockbuster would charge you for a game disc. And if you can get it immediately, there's no loading on these games as well. That's an amazing thing. When you launch Assassin's Creed 2, even on the 360, you have to wait for the game to load. This just comes on. Like, you're at the title screen immediately.
As long as you keep your internet connection. That's the thing that's the caveat.
It's a cool service. It's very limited at the moment. I'm lucky to be in there. I mean, you can't just go on the site now and sign up and play it. You have to go in a waiting line. Because I guess they don't want to overload the service, you know, and then it'll be shitty for everybody. So, you can try it. You can go to onlive.com, sign up, and you'll get in there eventually. But I am in there at the moment, and I will keep trying it over the weeks and tell you if it gets any better. Because at the moment, there's only the launch lineup of games, which is about 15 games as far as I can see.
You should plug in my laptop, because you said it's made for people who may not have the powerful computer or, like, people with Macs. But I have, like, my laptop. And my laptop does play games.
Your laptop would play games anyway. I mean,
my old laptop. That would be a good one to try. Plug it in to the...
There are minimum specifications that you need your computer to have. And one of them is a dual-core CPU. Now, my netbook has a dual-core CPU. Now, my netbook's not very powerful, but it can run a 720p video stream. So if I plug my netbook into the browser, I would be able to try it. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it would work, as long as I'm...
Plugged in.
Eventually, they're going to support Wi-Fi. But what it will be is you'll have to drop it down to like a YouTube size window. Mm. But some people might be fine to do that on Wi-Fi on the netbook, just to play like a puzzle game or something that's not so.
Not me. I wouldn't pay the same price for that.
I think that will be cheaper the lower. Like you'll be able, say you're into Bejeweled 2 and they've got that on their service. Now, it doesn't necessarily need to be 720p high def Bejeweled 2.
Yeah, but you don't want it this big in the middle of the screen.
Well, not that big. You could still full screen it. It'd just be a lower bit rate, video that's coming to you. And it'd look maybe blocky sometimes. But as a trade-off, because maybe your notebook can't even play that game. The other big deal about it is people with a Mac who can't play most games, because not all games come out for Mac. In fact, very few do. Can play any game that's available on the OnLive service on the Mac. So, you know, that could be a good selling point for those people. So that's OnLive. I can't give it a thumbs up, thumbs down really yet. I think I need more time with it. The other thing I have to mention, you can plug in an Xbox 360 controller into your PC. And it works seamlessly. The interface, all the games, everything. So you don't need to use mouse and keyboard.
Why Xbox?
Because... Funnily enough, the Xbox 360 controller has become the controller standard for PCs. Like, when the Xbox 360 controller came out with the wired one, like the USB one that I've got, all the game companies decided to switch to it, and now every PC game just supports it out of the box. So
not the PS3 one? PS2?
That doesn't even work with the PC, because it's Bluetooth. So, well, it does, but...
No wired one.
The PlayStation controller, there isn't a wired one.
Wow.
They make a wireless one and that's it. And you can get it hooked up to a PC, but it's not... But because Windows 7 supports it by default, everything works. So, third thing I've been playing on the DS. This week, Puzzle Quest 2 came out, which is the sequel to Puzzle Quest, obviously. You know what Puzzle Quest is. I don't know if you really played the original.
No.
It's Bejeweled, but integrated into an RPG. So you're kind of like, you're playing an RPG. Like, you've got characters on the screen, you go and get quests, like a World of Warcraft almost, but it's like a isometric 2D kind of deal. But when you have to fight a monster, it's basically a game of Bejeweled, but it has set rules to it. It's not just like, play Bejeweled. It's like, this game, you're trying to fight this dragon, you have to clear all the purple gems off the board before he does, kind of thing. There's always different... So it's a puzzle game with a story, but it essentially is Bejeweled, but it's really fun. I mean, it's hard to put down once you start playing it.
Oh, yeah.
It's on the DS, which I've been playing this week, and it works really well on the DS, to be honest, with the stylus. I mean, stylus is perfect for Bejeweled. But this Wednesday, it's coming out on Xbox Live Arcade. I think it's going to be $15, which might sound like a lot, but I think this game is like a 70-hour game. Like, you could be playing it from now till Christmas and still not finish if you're just casual about it. So, it's coming up this week. It's on the DS now. I think it's $29.99 on the DS. So, the Xbox Live version is actually cheaper. The next thing I have on the list is Steam, which is, we've mentioned before, which is a PC, what do you call it, game delivery service. Is having this huge sale at the moment. And I'm not talking like a shitty little sale. I'm talking like some of the latest games, most games, well, just new games. Like, the other night I spent $15. I came away with 6 games.
Nice.
I'm not talking like little shitty games. I'm talking like Fuel, which is a racing game for the PC that cost $50 last week. It was $4. I got a puzzle game for 99 cents, which was a puzzle game I had my eye on called Puzzle Kingdoms, which is similar to Puzzle Quest, but for 99 cents.
Do you think maybe they're getting the idea that if you make games a reasonable price for people who work for a living, that they will buy them?
Yeah.
And not just go $60, screw you. You know what I mean? Like, you buy six games for $15. That's $15 they didn't have before.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get a bunch of games. They may not be brand new, but I mean, it doesn't... That's the idea, isn't
it? I mean, this sale, it happens every day, right? So, from now until July the 4th. So, if you log on to steampowered.com, you get the client, you can see the store. Now, every 24 hours, they put five or six new games up that are discounted. And then it lasts for 24 hours. There's a timer. You have to buy it before the 24 hours is out or the price goes back to normal. But this week they've had, like, the Rockstar Collection, which is, like, everything that Rockstar has made from, like, the first Grand Theft Auto to the Ballad of Gay Tony, all the way, like, everything. Manhunt, Bully, everything. All of it. And, I mean, it's, like, I think it's... And Max Payne was in it. You know, anything that Rockstar's made. All of those games were $49.99 for the entire pack.
Not individually. All of them
everything,
together.
Everything. Like, all, like, if it was 30 games, all 30 games for $49.99, which you might think, oh, $49.99, that sounds steep. Well, no, that's like the price of one game generally.
Yeah.
GTA 4 would be $59.99, and that's in this bundle. So it's crazy. I mean, they had like they also have some cool indie packs, which are like, they threw together all the best indie games that normally cost like $10 each. Well, they've put 10 in a pack for a dollar.
Right.
So you can find some good stuff on there if you have a look, and every day it changes, and you can spend $20 and have enough games to last you all month or more.
Did you get the box of crap on Woot?
No. Impossible to get.
Not impossible. Somebody does it every time.
So that's the games for this week. Next week, there's quite a few games coming out. Naughty Bear, which is a psychotic teddy bear. Let's talk about it. It's for the 360. The new Transformers game, which I'm hearing really good things about, it's not anything to do with the movies. It's to do with the TV show, the old one. So I'm looking forward to that. And it's
Optimus Prime.
It's the game is actually the prequel to everything.
Oh, nice.
Like on their planet. So
before
it sounds really,
they came here.
Sounds
to
really cool. Yeah, how it happened. So I'm interested in playing that. Toy Story 3, the game, which I've had for a week, just not got round to. I will let you know how it is. And Lego Harry Potter, also on Tuesday. And then last item on my list, I put the World Cup, but we kind of discussed that at the beginning. So that's everything for me this week. What have you got for this week?
What's for dinner? We're going to have some pasta with some nice, just some garlicky, oniony sauce. And some fake meat of some kind. We've got, call it fake meat. We like to call them corn balls.
What are
vegetables?
We like to call them Missourians.
Yeah, me and you.
Oh, okay.
We're the only we I can speak for. I also want to say that Futurama is back. It was one of my favorite animated TV shows, and I've watched the first episode. It was funny, but I have to watch it again. It's one of those, like, I don't know if they're trying a little too hard or it's not this. It's the same voices. You said they were different, but they're the same. And
so they changed some people or something.
Maybe, but maybe not noticeable to me yet. I don't know. But I'm glad for that. I think it's some quality.
I never watched it originally. I think I saw one or two just on Comedy Central at night.
Yeah, but you have no sense of humor, so I can see why you don't like things like Family Guy, and so I understand.
Yeah.
and then, walking off frustration is my next topic. The other night I was at work, and I'm telling you now, the difference in my personality, that also covers the next topic, so I'll put it all together, right? I have a personality where I don't dislike it. I hate being told what to do. I don't like you hinting at it. I don't like you telling me or anybody else.
Go
I
make
never
it
have.
Now.
Exactly. I don't
no,
like
but,
I don't
I'm
like
saying.
Pretending to tell me. I don't like jokingly tell me. I don't like it.
I'll
it
tell
pisses
you. I'll
me
tell
off.
You.
And on different days it pisses me off at different levels. Sometimes I'm pissed off and I'm amused, and other days I'm just plain pissed off. So at work, I'm the supervisor. Although I've worked with the same guy for as many years as I've been there, he's been longer than me. He chooses not to be supervisor, so I'm supervisor. And no matter where I am, he always has a habit of sending me a little message to say, oh, did you notice this? Oh, did you see that? Oh, did you notice you didn't do that? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And I get irritated every single time. And this week, he asked me 3 or 4 times why I was doing something. And this other guy... And then all of a sudden, my thing changed. Someone changed the settings on the thing I was working on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. Don't hover over me. Don't tell me what to do. A, I know better than you how to do it. B, just don't do it. I fucking hate it. I mean, I was...
You just turned this podcast into the explicit tone.
So then I find out... I already said that word before. So then I find out it wasn't him. It was the other guy who changed it because... And the other guy has a completely different motivation. He's totally productive-minded. He doesn't... He's not... He totally does not tell you what to do or how to do it. But he wants to keep things moving. And he saw that this thing... My setting was a certain way. So he's like, oh, I'll change it so things can keep moving and keep moving ahead. Which was... That's why I had to go for a walk. Because I felt like you people are getting on. If you don't want me to do it my way, then guess what? I'll go home, which you all bitch and moan about every time I take the night off. Because it's like, oh, we're lost without you here to answer every single question we have. But when I am there, they're hovering over me. Yes. But then I was like, okay, I need to go outside. Because this is this personality that's rearing me up? Or is this the people? Right? So I had to go outside, walk around the entire building, which is about, it's quite a ways. It's 3/4 of a mile around this big block. And it was hot, and it's uphill half the way, and I was just steaming. And I had to work out the difference between their motivations. One guy thinks it's funny, and he's a fucking control freak, so he has to keep pecking at everybody, which drives me crazy. And the other guy truly...
I still haven't emailed that guy back.
...has a genuine motivation of just keeping things going, right? So when I was irritated, he could actually tell without me even saying anything. So when I came back from my walk, I said, oh, no, this is not you. This is the guy who would actually changed my setting. I said, and I explained to him the difference between my reaction to things and being told what to do. And understanding the difference between the person who's what you actually mean. When you say to me, when you've told me 3 hours in advance, oh, I don't want to eat dinner till later. So I go on about my business, I'm doing my thing. And then you walk down the hall and you go, is dinner ready? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You said you're not, is it ready? When's it going to be ready? Meaning you want it right that second. You're telling me to get it ready. But you pretend like you're not. And that drives me crazy. So this was another thing. I'm like, but you're not.
Should I just say, get it ready, woman?
No, but the thing is, you're not malicious. You're just, you don't even understand what you're doing. So I give you the benefit of the doubt, and I love you. I don't love these other people. But just in life, I'm learning, trying to learn.
Are you saying that I just potter around the house not even knowing what's going on? Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing.
No. You have this tendency to think that everything you say and do is from the nicest, most positive place.
It is.
But in fact, it is not. Sometimes you are being bossy and you're being demanding and controlling, but you don't know it. So I give you the benefit of the doubt. Because I love you. I predict you've been this way your whole life. But I have to take a second in my mind not to go, fix your own damn supper, and be irritated and think to myself, oh, he's not actually... He is telling me to make dinner, but he doesn't understand why. That's frustrating.
If
so,
you said get your own damn supper, I'd say, oh, fine, do you want some?
Yeah, but why should I react that way? That's my point. Sometimes a person's motivation that irritates you isn't to irritate you. You have to separate the difference. The two guys at work, one guy does it because he knows it. He pushes every button that makes every noise that drives everybody crazy. He's the first one to throw a pallet on the ground because it makes a noise to make everybody jump, and he thinks it's hysterical.
It's the devil and the angel on your shoulder.
I don't think the other guy's an angel, but I know their motivations are different. You know what I mean? One's a jokester, hover, control freak, and the other one just wants to get the work done. So I had to go for the walk. By the time I came back in, I had taken lots of deep breaths of hot, steamy air outside, and I was still irritated. And I made it clear to both of them, you know, if you want to do the print, which is what I was doing, like big, massive industrial print, you come in here and do it. No, I don't want to do it. Fair enough. Then don't tell me what to do. And the other guy said, I totally get what you're doing. You move. I mean, if I don't want you to do something, I'll let you know ahead of time because I understand. So if you find yourself in your life always being reactive to people because you think they're always attacking you to boss you around, they might be, but consider their actual motivation before you lash out, because I can lash out. Very severely. And I don't at you because I love you. It doesn't mean I don't feel it. You know what I'm saying?
Deep breaths of hot, steamy air sounds so refreshing.
Well, somehow it relaxed me. And I was listening to some pod... I don't forget what the podcast was. I think CADcast, that big long one or something. Or maybe just music. I don't remember. But, you know, I'm learning. I've been penting that up all week. That I'd like, get it out.
That was a good rant. So
it's not a rant. That's just my experience explaining to you. Maybe there's something in your life that you, somebody who, and we have, I have another guy at work who everything he says just makes me want to grit my teeth like I just did. And I'm nobody to him. And yet I take it all personally and it's not personal. So I just have to figure out his motivation is different than I think it is. And that's it.
I still think Sid Talk's rant is more snappy than what you just said.
It's not rant. Rant anyway. Is a bullshit internet term. I don't like it.
That's not an internet term. That's,
you know what I'm saying. Modern way to say that somebody has an opinion about something. It's not a rant.
All right. Sid Talk's opinion. Thanks for listening to the show.
See, being dismissive. But I'm going to take that in consideration, what your motivation is.
Correct.
And go take a deep, hot, steamy breath.
Nice. So thanks for listening to the show. I want to remind you about the websites. We've got ascully.com and sidtalk.com.
Ascully.com is ASCULLY.com.
And sidtalk.com is CIDTALK.com. We've also got presences on Twitter, Facebook, Xbox Live, YouTube.
Just Google either one of those words and you'll find.
Yeah, just search for Ascully or Sidtalk. And you'll find us on the web. You'll also find this podcast on the iTunes Music Store, the Zune Marketplace. And we also have an RSS feed, which you can go to ascully.com, click on the word podcast. You can subscribe, listen, whatever you want to do. 128 episodes are there for your perusal.
If you search for Sid Talk, C-I-D-T-A-L-K, Google will say, did you mean sidewalk?
And you'll just and say, I don't know what it'll say if I say ascully.
He'll find you.
You never know. And you can email me at ascully@ascully.com. Don't need to email Sid Talk. And I just want to say...
No, unless you got something to say that I'm going to be irritated about.
Yeah. And stay classy, Flash Garden, because you saved every one of us.
Every one of us. Flash Gordon. I always like to the
There's Gordon. No Gordon. Yeah, every time you sing the Queen Flash Gordon song, that you say the word Gordon.
I say Flash and I'm like, Gordon.
Freddie doesn't say Gordon, ever.
Freddie, so, like you're friends with him.
I am friends.
And I'm going to say, stay classy.
No, you're not. That's not your catchphrase.
No, I was going to say, stay classy, Brian Mays, but I will say...
That'll be Brian May.
Brian May's guitar. I'm going to say, think for yourself. Then again, sometimes, because someone will do it for you. The thing is, sometimes what you think may not be the way it is, so rethink for yourself, or someone else will do it for you. Flash.
King of the